Can everybody hear me?
Please let me know if you can't hear. I'm not used to holding a mic. So, who was John Hare? Dad was a gentle, peaceable, curious, intelligent, creative, generous, active, and loyal man. He was, like many of his generation, a hard-working and committed family man. He learned the value of things growing up in the Depression and took lifelong pleasure and satisfaction from fixing and creating things from old or broken bits and pieces. Like most of his generation, he grew up knowing how to tread lightly on the earth. Dad was a man who struggled to confront uncomfortable feelings, choosing rather to take a peaceful route and avoid confrontation whenever he could. He did, I believe, relearn the joy and sustenance of close, supportive family and friends in the years after Mum's death. And for perhaps the first time in our lives, finished most calls and visits with, "I love you, Fee." We always knew he loved us, but he did not use those words until the last years. Many of Dad's friends are here, and some have been mentioned in the summary that we'll share next. But Dad and Mum were loved, and loved in return, so many people from such a variety of places, backgrounds and interests around Australia and around the world. They were generous, giving people who inspired and touched the people they knew. We've had messages of sadness at Dad's passing from all over the world, and as well as the many friends and family here today, there are many more who are with us in spirit. Professionally, Dad influenced the lives of many, both directly as patients and in his teaching role of orthodontic graduates. He never accepted any dogma, and I believe continued to intelligently question and explore alternative ways of approaching challenges, both professionally and in his wider life throughout his life. Dad was never happier than when learning, whether that was listening or reading about someone else's field of expertise, or just chewing the fat over any issue in the universe that interested someone. I remember clearly discussing the minutiae of the way the human body worked over childhood breakfasts, and I'm sure all of my siblings and Dad's grandchildren could tell you of stimulating conversations with him. He was fascinated by anything and everything. He also had a remarkable memory, recalling details of things that no one else did. Dad was a remarkable man in a lot of ways, but his belief that to live a long, full and active life, you have to exercise everything, not just your brain and heart, is certainly one of the inspirations he's left us. He and Mum were amazingly fit. Dad played tennis and rode his bike right until the last couple of weeks of his life. We'd often get a call any day of the week from some far-flung point in Melbourne, conceding he might catch the train back to Camberwell, as he'd already ridden 20 or 40 k's. In the last month of his life, despite his unwellness, Dad climbed the rocky outcrop at Oobir in Kakadu with Ian and I, looking out with tears in his eyes at his achievement. That is a precious memory that I will treasure. Dad will be missed by many, many people, none more than his children and grandchildren. But he knew that he'd left the legacy of a strong, loving, committed family unit. He wept days before he died, when Dan and Rihanna informed him that if his first grandchild was a boy, his name, great-grandchild, was a boy, his name would include John. John's legacy will go on.
I'm going to stay sitting now. John Robert Heath was born 16th of June 1928. Parents, John Samuel Robert Heath and Eileen Wynne Kirk. Brothers Peter and Michael were born 5 and 10 years after John. Dad started school at Camberwell Grammar, but despite excelling for 2 years, to his regret, he was moved to Camberwell South State School, which was more in line with his parents' anti-elitist philosophy. One has to wonder how they reconciled that with driving a Rolls-Royce. He transferred to Oakley State School 2.5 years later when his parents bought a church in 1937. The conversion of the church into the home in which they lived for 24 years, created something of a social sensation. Magazines featured its architecture, the orchard Grandpa planted, and the first all-electric kitchen in Melbourne. Life around the church was free and extravagant, fishing and roaming the swamp and the sand dunes in pursuit of rabbits and starlings to feed to their bohemian friends, and even the Melbourne Wine and Food Society. A backyard chemistry lab provided the boys with endless entertainment as they launched or exploded the neighbourhood. Dad attended Dandenong High School, continuing to university by commencing a science degree in metallurgy, and would commute on a moped that required a superhuman effort to pedal up Punt Road Hill. He changed to dentistry in his second year, after spending 4 weeks catching up on subjects missed, and graduated in 1950. During his study years, he extended his affair with Victoria's High Country and formed a lifelong friendship with one John C. Brown of Miller, the Brown brothers. This was to blossom into a full-fledged passion to know and understand wine. The best wine was only available in bulk to collectors. So with an ancient cast iron corking machine, he began to build a collection of fine wines that grew to 3,000 bottles. Later on, these were stored in a cellar under their bedroom in Camberwell, hidden behind a creepy surgery sign on the barrel stave door. For most evenings of our childhood, there was a bottle of fine wine on the table, and it became more frequent that this was the last bottle of this wine left on earth. After graduation, he travelled to London to study orthodontics under Clifford Ballard, and it was here in February 1953 that a beautiful young woman from New Zealand was rostered to assist him chairside. Her name was Nolene Perrott. They would sneak into every possible musical performance together, even foregoing food to pay for tickets. He demonstrated his crepe-tossing skills to her in the London flat, which he shared with Richard Hardham, a lifelong friend, and they had many other adventures travelling Europe. I was looking for Richard, I can't see him. On moving back to Melbourne, he began work at his father's dental practice in Collins Street, but pursued Nolene by writing every day for many months. She would receive a weekly bundle of love letters and came to know that she could not escape his attentions. On Nolene's return to Te Awamutu, he continued to write to her every day until they finally married in New Zealand in December 54.
Continuing on this story, the happy couple returned to Oakley House, where Nolene looked after John, his brothers, and the gardener, while Dad's parents holidayed for months in Europe. That was quite significant because she did all the cooking for all of them, and she was the only female in the house. They then rented a house in Yarbert Avenue, Bourbon, until they bought a little house in Maple Street, Blackburn, the deposit being provided from the meagre savings of Ern Perrott, Nolene's father. Four children entered John's life between 1957 and 1962. Dad began a master's degree in 1958, finishing in 1961. Despite the house being full of young babies, he would often disappear out to his combi van to study. He bought the first of many Holdens to handle the travel to Shepparton, where he attended country patients for one day per month, a service he provided for the following 24 years. In 1961, Dad and Mum bought 7 Murdoch Street, Camberwell, to raise the young Heath clan. Dad travelled to Bourke by train, Mum dropping him to and from the station between child commitments. His day finished very late, and we all regularly fell asleep to the sound of him dictating letters. They placed great importance on a good and broad education, and as soon as it was possible, the kids were moved from state schools, the girls to PLC and Clifford to Scotch College. Homework, music and tennis took precedence over household chores, in their priorities for us. Frugality was a philosophical position as much as it must, in retrospect, have been enforced. Dad developed an interest in cleft palate babies and spent many hours with colleagues ensuring the best outcomes for these children. One of his patients actually was Mandy Harmer from Gippsland, and she's gone on to do an amazing job with her life and looks great, really. Thanks to Dad. Summer holidays down the bay triggered an interest in sailing, and they bought their Sorrento house in 1972, which opened up a lifetime of adventure for the young family. He was a keen swimmer and snorkeler, but in the early days, we weren't encouraged to enjoy the surf due to his fear of sharks, following Uncle Peter's close brush with the shark that had taken his close friend John Richard in 1956. So we never surfed, we just sailed, but that was great. Instead, we all became keen sailors and were active members of Sorrento Sailing Club, Dad maintaining no fewer than 6 wooden boats one winter, which we all had to sand. We all worked on them. Dad was a great tinkerer and recycler, and I think managed to maintain his sanity in a bustling house with his creative and practical work in the garage. And they call them boys' sheds these days. He was a typical boys' shed guy. John also played squash weekly with Ian Gillies, who's here, for decades, beginning during their time in London. We lived adjacent to Willison Park Tennis Club and all played tennis regularly, a sport which he continued at least weekly, rising to twice a week in retirement, right up until a few weeks ago. Many of his tennis friends are here today.
He loved, supported, and attended the Melbourne arts scene, opera, theatre, ballet, classical music, a passion that only increased throughout his life. He and Mum rarely missed a concert where Shelley was playing her violin. We woke every Sunday morning of our childhoods to the towering sounds of Bach, Mahler, or Brahms flooding the house. Dad joined the university ski club when it was very new, and many work parties complemented our family holidays in the snow. In those days, there were 4 small, wet, leather pairs of double-laced ski boots to fit and remove twice a day. Being keen bushwalkers, they added cross-country to downhill skiing and even undertook overnight trips sleeping out in the snow as a group while we were teenagers. John was a Freemason attached to the Melbourne University Lodge, of which he was Lodge Master in 66 and again in 93, though he later left the Masons, being willing to expose his atheism. A courageous thing to do, and there were some that wouldn't speak to him afterwards. Professionally, he continued a teaching role at Melbourne University on Fridays until he was age 75 in the year 2003, and was much loved by his many orthodontic students. Professionally, he continued a teaching role at Melbourne University on Fridays until he was... In 1985, John moved his orthodontic practice to Camberwell from the city, where he worked with Mum assisting until 94. By then, all his children had left home and married. In 93, they sold their Murdoch Street residence and moved to Baldwin. They bought a four-wheel drive and a caravan and began their extensive Australia-wide travel, though for the first 10 years, still interspersed with regular, active overseas jaunts. During Fee and Ian's recent travels, John remembered the details of nearly every place they visited, with detailed recommendations of essentials and things to leave. This is one example of his extraordinary memory. Another is his ability to recite, correctly and at length, the poems he learned in school French classes, as well as his famous Sea Lions and Seals. Only last week, in a wakeful and lucid period, Dad performed the drum major skit of Silver Fletcher, because we mentioned that we did not have a recording of it. Dad's amazing brain is certainly one of the things we'll miss him for. Mum and Dad swam, snorkeled, cycled and played bridge all the way around Australia several times over the years. He was a devoted driver for the oldies, transporting them to day activities every week, but unfortunately when you reach the age of 80 years, you are no longer covered by insurance. So Dad was reluctantly forced to cease this activity.
Two and a half years ago, after one of their camping trips, Nolan died suddenly. traditional tasks of running a house was very hard, but with lots of encouragement and support, he built himself a new life. For the first few months, Clifford commuted from Sydney, where he now resided, to work in Melbourne and spend week about with Dad to support him as he adjusted. I know we all got calls with questions like, do we have spare sheets? And how often should I change them? He attended a weekly Boys in the Kitchen class, proudly feeding us his latest creations at our Friday night gatherings. He sold the pop-top van, which was too hard to manage solo, and bought his beloved A-van. He then proceeded to join the A-van club, who had an active social calendar. To continue to keep up with his cycling mates, he bought a power-assisted bike. As well as the long rides this group did, he also rode most weekends, usually alone, to various interesting places, often returning by train. He even rode to a cardiologist appointment where he was told he had clots in his lungs. In retrospect, this was the first indication of the cancer which finally took his life. Throughout his life, he maintained a large fleet of bikes for his own and then for extended family, often salvaging and rebuilding bicycles from the unburnable rubbish. He continued to attend his two tennis groups and played bridge several times a week at more than one bridge club. He was a passionate and active member of Probus and always had a story to tell about places and things he'd learned with this group. Many of his Probus and tennis friends will be here today. I think we're being a bit repetitive, but anyway, you'll have heard the whole story, that's the main thing. His love of music was continued and he was not daunted about attending concerts on his own. He often went to two concerts a week. It was through this interest that he connected with an old family friend, Mem Cohen. They began an extremely special friendship, attending concerts together, and later became almost invincible bridge partners. It was so wonderful for Dad to have found this companionship. He also began attending the local council exercise classes to maintain upper body strength, being anxious to maintain his health and fitness, although in hindsight, his dwindling weight was associated with his cancer. His passion for gardening increased as he had free rein at home and he could indulge his creativity. His lovely Boston Road garden will certainly be a delight for the next fortunate owners. In a sense, the garden was his therapy. He certainly has a somewhat daunting but beautiful collection of amazingly flowering orchids, which was part of his garden. He also gained much happiness when Ian and I moved into Boston Road beginning of the year. And he had daily family company again. It was especially exciting to have a male in the house to be mates with, and Ian was a doting son-in-law who totally loved John's company. We shared meals, tasks and responsibilities without impeding any of our independence. I feel privileged to have got to know Dad in a new way during this time. It was a joy to spend time with him, and particularly to hear more detail of his incredibly full, well-lived life. Dad was only finally diagnosed with the pancreatic cancer that killed him 2 weeks before he died. In hindsight, it's clear now that his health issues over the last 2 years were directly related to the cancer, but it's common for it to be undiagnosed till near the end. We're grateful that he didn't know sooner what it was, because he lived his life to the full, to the very end. We've got a slideshow, which Ian and Clifford have compiled, which will be shown on the screen. So some people may need to turn their chairs so they can see. And afterwards, if we can just turn back into round to the front again, we'll have a chance we'll have a time where we can just share a few memories.
The slideshow runs a very long time, so we love them to sit and watch it right through.
The slideshow is also online, so if you do miss it today, you can go home and click on it and have a look. It's in your program, yes. The link. We actually think we probably won't play the whole slideshow because it is long, but as we've said, the link to it is in the program.